It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Amid a shortage of affordable housing, congressional Democrats seek to prevent large investors and private equity firms from reaping certain tax benefits from buying up dozens of single-family homes and rental properties. We discuss the Stop Predatory Investing Act. It's co-sponsored by U.S. Senator Tammy Baldwin of Wisconsin. And we look at how it could affect our state's housing market. Be part of the conversation. Call in with a question or comment. 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Liz Farmer is author of the fiscal policy newsletter called Long Story Short and specializes in state and local tax policy. Liz, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Thanks, Kate. Great to be back.
Well, give us some context here. When did big investors start buying up large chunks of housing stock?
Yeah, so this phenomenon is really, in many ways, a result of the 2007 and 2008 housing crisis. Before that, if you think about it, there was suddenly, within a few years, a huge stock of homes available. And previously, investor-owned housing was more like in the rental market, large buildings, but this created an unusual situation where homes were just available on the cheap and they could be swapped up and dumped into these, into housing portfolios and rented out for profit. And knowing what they sold for today and what some of these homes in blighted areas can continue to sell for, it's a really lucrative business for these large investor-owned firms or private equity portfolios.
Yeah. Can you explain a bit more about what market conditions would draw in more predatory real estate speculation? What are those market conditions that make particular neighborhoods or cities very lucrative and very attractive to this type of investor?
So there's a project at the Lincoln Institute of Land Policy that's looking at this. It's called the Accelerating Community Investment Project. And they're going by the numbers. And what the numbers say is that the lower income and majority minority neighborhoods tend to be where these investors target. And you can see that play out. So nationwide, an increasing percentage of homes are being sold to investors. And I think one quarter of homes sold in 2021 were purchased by outside investors. But on the city level, you can see in an increasing share of homes going from a owner-occupied unit to an investor, whether that's a local state investor or someone outside the state. And for example, in Cleveland, in Baltimore, I've got that example here in front of me. In Baltimore, there's a low-income neighborhood where in 2022, 19% of say only 19% of sales were actually sold to an owner-occupied. Were sold as owner-occupied. In the more well-to-do area of Baltimore, 81% of homes were sold as owner-occupied sales. So you can see this huge discrepancy. On the flip side, in Cleveland, Ohio, looking at the number of homes that were purchased by investors in a single zip code in Cleveland, 70% of homes in 2021 were all purchased by investors. And so they are really targeting nationwide, the number is rising, but you can see they're really, really targeting certain areas. And the research from the Community Investment Project shows that it's these lower income majority and minority areas that they're targeting, which of course then brings on those implications for gentrification.
So the name of the legislation, Stop Predatory Investing Act, how does the measure define predatory investing?
Yeah, so it doesn't necessarily define predatory investing. When I read through it, it's pretty cut and dry, in the sense that it's targeting these larger businesses or private equity firms that own, you know, a lot of single family rental homes. It prohibits an investor who acquires 50 or more single family rental homes from deducting from tax breaks that they could deduct normally as a business expense. And those tax breaks are interest, mortgage interest expenses, and depreciation. And the biggie there is mortgage interest. That is normally a noticeable business expense. There are some limitations. It only applies to dwellings with no more than four units. So we're talking about, like, you know, homes that are multi-dwelling units, but no more than four, or single-family homes or duplexes. They're really targeting that, you know, single-family home aspect. And there are exemptions: nonprofits like community development organizations, land banks, land trusts, subsidiaries of public housing agencies. They're all exempt from this. And it does allow considerations, exemptions as well, for any properties that are financed using the low income housing tax credit. So you can really see how it's geared towards what we were just talking about.
Those very larger, certain segment of real estate investors. Yes,
exactly.
Liz Farmer is here, fiscal policy journalist, as we talk about housing speculation around the country and here in Wisconsin and new federal legislation. You can join in with your questions and comments at 800-642-1234. Let's go to Matt in Mequon. Matt, hi, go ahead.
Hi, so my comment is that these private equity groups like the Blackstone Group, they're based in places like London. They don't have any buy-in to the community. They don't have any, like, loyalty to communities. And because they operate on a continental scale, they can keep rents artificially high. And they're just about zapping the equity out of communities. They have zero interest in communities. And communities really need to come up with ways to really limit their investment in communities, really just to keep them the hell out.
Matt, thanks for calling in. Zapping equity from communities, Liz, how do you respond to that?
I mean, he's right in the sense that, I mean, any city, any neighborhood really benefits from having homeowners. Homeowners are invested, or even long-term renters, people who aren't going anywhere. They're invested in the community. They want to take care of their property. And the real concern that cities especially have with these, with large swaths of properties owned by, you know, outside investors, is that there isn't that dedication. They're just there to make a profit. I do want to point out that Cincinnati Port Authority had a really interesting project where they were actually able to reclaim almost 200 homes that were owned by an outside investor from California that was going to sell them. The Port Authority heard about it, was able to swoop in, get some bond financing to purchase all those homes. And they're now in the middle of rehabbing some of them that were vacant and selling those to pay back the financing, and then working with the current residents on a path to homeownership. So there, it is possible to do this.
Have you seen, you know, this is an example in Cincinnati. Have you seen local communities adopt ordinances or policies that prevent predatory real estate investors from swooping in and from this happening?
There are certainly cities that target blight. There are a number of cities like Washington, D.C., that have higher tax rates for vacant properties. Detroit's in the middle of this effort to try to do that in a different way by implementing the land value tax. It's something that's done elsewhere, but it would be the first in the U.S. And it basically it taxes the value of the land, as it suggests, but it does not kind of ding you if you want to for any property that you build on it. So essentially, it encourages you to build property, because if you're going to be given the full tax bill for the value of the land, you are incentivized to then want to make money out of that by having something that you could sell or rent. So it's more complicated than that, but there are efforts. But the difference with this predatory investing act is it takes money away from, it takes profit away from those investors by not allowing them to claim tax credits that are claim deductions that they normally would, and then that increases their declared income that they then get taxed on.
Megan from Green Bay called into our program this week and raised a few concerns about entering the housing market.
I hear so much about the housing market being so high, and I, as somebody so young, I want to own a home later in life, but it's a scary idea, and I know that house prices are so high, but I have no clue why.
So aside from competition with these large investors, what other factors in the housing market that might be driving up prices where Megan lives?
There are so many. This is part of it, but it's also that it is expensive to build in areas. Interestingly enough, this act targets single-family homes. But most cities, surprisingly, are majority zoned for single family housing. This is so different from places elsewhere in the world. Even I think the only city where there's a minority of zoning for single family homes is in New York. But places like San Francisco, which we all know is super duper expensive, I think something like around 70% of the city is zoned for single family housing. So it really is that there's like physical constraints on how many homes you can build. And of course, when the supply is limited, the demand, the prices go up. And if you could build up instead of having to look for somewhere else to build out, that would change things. So zoning is a huge aspect of it. And many places are looking at this, looking at, you know, installing rental units and the mini homes and stuff like that to add housing. But it's that is a huge factor right there.
Fiscal policy journalist Liz Farmer, as we look at efforts in Congress to limit big investors buying up homes that could go to first-time home buyers, as we discuss housing issues, call in with a question. Share your view, 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We discuss housing opportunity in Wisconsin and efforts underway by some Democrats in Congress to rein in investors who buy up dozens of homes, turning these properties into higher cost rentals and pushing up the cost of home ownership in some neighborhoods. Join in at any point in this housing discussion. Call in with a question or comment, 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. Liz Farmer is a fiscal policy journalist, stays with us, and Christine Donahoe is a civil rights attorney in Wisconsin. Chris, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Hi. So Liz Farmer was laying out the Stop Predatory Investing Act, you know, prohibiting investors who acquire 50 or more single family rental homes from deducting interest or depreciation on those properties. What impact would this legislation have on renters?
Well, this type of legislation is going to help try to keep the price of renting down, because right now, the cost of renting, especially in a city like Milwaukee, where there's a lot of old homes and the population's been stagnant, the cost of renting is way out of touch with the value of homes. And part of that is that, you know, housing is a basic need and renters have no leverage. They have to rent. And so these types of investors that are Wall Street firms, they see single family homes as an asset class. They don't see single family homes as a necessity for families and cities and part of the community. And so they're going to gouge their tenants for as much as possible. They're not making the kinds of repairs that landlords who live in the community make. And they are using eviction just as a, you know, business means of keeping profits up, not as, you know, an absolute last resort. They're not seeing eviction as a trauma that happens to families and that destroys communities.
So an asset class in a portfolio where you can't see faces of families. And, you know, so after buying up these homes, the investors then turn them into rentals, raising the price of living there. Is that a way that drives out tenants and home buyers?
Well, it drives out tenants and home buyers. It drives out tenants because the price of renting gets so extreme that tenants have, you know, many tenants are using, some tenants are spending 70 to 80% of their income on renting, and that is not sustainable. And over time, sometimes just a matter of months, but certainly over years, that means that those tenants have to be evicted. But they have no other option. They can't find homes that are more affordable, that are, say, more like 25 or 30% of their income. So it drives tenants out from, you know, one apartment to the next, and they just bounce from eviction to eviction to eviction. And it drives out homeowners because the way that these investors buy property puts them, you know, they're in direct competition with potential home buyers, but the fight is not fair. These equity investors are buying with cash often, and they're buying in bulk. So they will buy a whole group of properties from a landlord, maybe five or seven in one case in one day. An out-of-state landlord bought seven properties in one day. And they buy that bulk in, you know, at a cost that's lower than if those homes were sold individually. But because they're buying several of them and landlords can offload those properties so easily with a cash buyer, local would-be home buyers have absolutely no chance of getting the property.
Let's go to Paul in Madison. Paul, hi. Go ahead.
Hi there. Great topic. And I think the legislation sounds great and could be very useful. I'd be really curious to hear what your expert's opinion would be on if it actually would pass, given that so many of our legislators are landlords or real estate investors themselves.
Paul, thank you. Liz, it's Prospects.
I mean, probably pretty dim, considering the makeup of Congress right now. I don't think with a Republicans in control, this is necessarily something that would pass. It's an all Democrat sponsored legislation in the Senate. But the notion of it is something that could get considered in other budget bills later on down the line. It certainly is something that could be passed as part of a new tax reform bill or something like that. But in this iteration right now, it's more of a conversation starter.
Paul, thank you so much for the question. As we talk about housing and federal legislation to stop predatory investing in the real estate market across the country, Liz Farmer, fiscal policy journalist, and Chris Donahoe here, Wisconsin-based civil rights attorney. You can join in with your questions at 800-642-1234. Tony now in Sturgeon Bay. Tony, hi.
Good morning. There's been a popular housing option. Some people call it co-housing. Some people call it intentional living, but something where it's kind of a micro community. People live in their own very efficient small house, but there's communal facilities for dining, crafts, arts, theater. And is that type of housing gaining any traction in Wisconsin or in the United States?
Tony, thank you. Chris?
I have not heard any discussions about legislation to support or promote these types of intentional living communities. I will say that they're a great option for some people, but a lot of the people that you see facing eviction and extreme housing need are young families. And these are often single parents, single mothers, usually, who have multiple children. And I think that type of living situation would be tough for a young family with multiple kids. So we always need to consider how we're supporting and promoting home ownership and also sustainable renting for families that need more space.
Liz Farmer, there was this recent report by the real estate brokerage firm Redfin finding that the number of these investor purchases is falling in cities around the country, including in Milwaukee. What might that mean for home buyers? Maybe have we reached a peak and it's coming down?
It might be, but just because the number of purchases are falling doesn't mean they're stepping out of the market. Yeah. It could be a saturation issue. They certainly own a lot of homes already, and that could be just it. So I would definitely view that with an eye of caution, and certainly not want to say that they're slowing down.
Chris, could companies effectively circumvent the new legislation and the new restrictions by creating a new subsidiary for every 49 properties, get right up to the limit?
Well, I absolutely think that they will get right up to the limit. And it's also true that these types of companies have all sorts of shell companies. They set up these LLCs, and it's very difficult to track down exactly who and what company is doing what. And they do that intentionally. They take advantage of all of the corporate laws to insulate themselves from liability and also to shield any information about them and what they're doing. However, if they're reporting and following the law, they shouldn't be able to, you know, all of those subsidiary companies should be considered in the context of, you know, who the ultimate company is. And I just want to say that, you know, the loser here is not only individuals and families, but the loser is also the state of Wisconsin. Since 2017, the state of Wisconsin has had a net loss of over $285 million in real estate value. And that's something for legislators within the state and without to consider.
But on the flip side, are there any arguments to maintain real estate investor tax breaks?
No, not if you're considering the health of the community.
Liz, you're laughing. Go ahead.
There was an awkward pause. It's a good question.
But it's something to ponder. Liz, I want to thank you so much for joining us and explaining a bit more on this legislation. We appreciate it.
Thanks for allowing me to come. Thanks. It was great.
Liz Farmer, author of the Fiscal Policy Newsletter, Long Story Short, and Wisconsin civil rights attorney Chris Donahoe stays with us. There's more conversation ahead about housing and home ownership. Call in with a question, add your perspective, 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show here on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We explore predatory housing investment practices and the effects on Wisconsin's housing market as congressional Democrats sponsor a bill to prohibit an investor who acquires 50 or more single-family rental homes from getting certain tax breaks on them. Call in with a question, share a comment, 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. We have attorney Chris Donahoe, who stays with us, and Deatra Kemp is here, Vice President of Programs for Axe Housing. That's a nonprofit helping families of color build wealth in Milwaukee and Beloit through home buying and rehab services. Dee, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Happy to be here. Thank you for having me.
Explain how these rising interest rates that are aimed at cooling inflation, how are they affecting your organization's work on housing issues?
They're definitely impacting the purchase power of the families that we're trying to serve. As interest rates rise, of course, that limits their ability and the amount that they can pay for available homes. And of course, availability is a big issue, which is why we're talking about these predatory landlords coming into our state. It really does cause that demand in the market to grow even more, which I think has an even greater impact on people looking for homes in our community.
So, you know, there's limited supply, and then you also have these all cash offers and people with much more cash on hand to be able to go in and buy these single family homes. Is that what you're seeing in Milwaukee and Beloit?
Absolutely. Great example is a couple of years ago, we had a California firm come in and buy on the north side of Milwaukee 65 units. They were able to do it as a huge portfolio sale and broke down that they were able to buy these homes for about $55,000 apiece. They came in, raised the rent, didn't pull any permits, didn't do anything to improve the quality of life for families that were renting these homes, and drove up costs, which of course caused many of them to have to move because we're in a period where inflation is happening and a lot of other factors that are really hitting families hard. So as those rental expenses go up, we're really pricing families out of the market. If families had had the opportunity to buy those homes at $55,000 apiece, you're talking about them paying, with principal, interest, taxes, and insurance, about $500 a month for their housing expenses. That is what allows you to build wealth and take better care of your family and really work towards your dreams. At the bottom of all this is we're talking about people not having access to the American dream because corporations are swooping in and buying up homes.
It makes me wonder, Chris, as corporations do this, and Dee talks with that specific example of buying properties, what is the role of banks and financial institutions that lend to these real estate investors who are able to buy more and borrow against the properties they have in their portfolio?
Well, often banks don't have any role at all because these private equity firms, as you noted, have so much cash and equity on hand that they're able to do this without financing. And every time that they do this, they build up more and more wealth and they can buy more and more with cash. And so this is one of the major reasons that they are, unfairly competing with local families. Local families, almost everybody needs to get a mortgage in order to buy a home. Almost nobody has $55,000 in their bank account to swoop up and buy a home. And so the more wealth, I mean, this ultimately just contributes to income inequality, right? These corporations are getting richer and richer, and families are getting poorer and poorer in comparison.
We heard from Reed in Hales Corners, called in and said that they relocated from Las Vegas recently. And Reed and their wife make about $150,000 a year. They cashed out some investments before moving to Wisconsin. And Reed says they feel completely prepared to buy a home, but they cannot find one. And Reed says, what is going on with the Wisconsin housing market and when might it turn around? Dee, what do you find in that scenario?
I think the great thing that's happening in a lot of on the local level is that officials care about affordable housing and home ownership opportunities being available to the community. So you're seeing a lot of collective effort around trying to ensure that our housing inventory is actually available to first-time home buyers or people buying their second homes, but for owner occupancy. So there is a lot of collective effort happening, which I think is shown through this bill that was co-sponsored by Tammy Baldwin. What we do need to see, though, on the local level is some return of control to municipalities. Act 317 was passed a few years ago, and that actually took away local control over landlords and people who own rental properties, and really created an opening for these investors to come in and start gobbling up homes in our market, which makes it more difficult for that family to actually find a home that's available. These deals are happening off market. These homes aren't even hitting the market so that families who may have the cash can compete. So when these houses don't even come on market so families can see them and have the opportunity to purchase them, that's when we're in a situation like he described. So we definitely have to do the work within the government and locally to say, hey, we're going to make home ownership a priority. We want Wisconsin to be owned by Wisconsinites.
When you do the work locally in this type of environment, how does Axe Housing help people buy homes in Wisconsin?
We are a one-stop shop for home ownership. It is our privilege to offer all the services that a family would need to purchase a home, whether that's credit repair and help with budgeting and getting pre-approval, or real estate assistance through our brokerage. We also have a non-traditional lending arm. So if you can't get bank financing, but you still have aspirations of home ownership, definitely an opportunity to engage with an organization like Axe to find out what's our criteria to purchase a home. Definitely a lot of inventory issues out here. So the opportunity to be able to buy a property that is not being used right now and really bring it back to life, I think is appealing to a lot of people and definitely helps enrich our communities that have these homes that are boarded up or that are not being utilized right now with the limited inventory that is available. And then, of course, this year, just to address this issue, we launched our acquisition division. We're acting like developers now. We want to come in, buy up these portfolios of properties instead of these out-of-state investors so that we can turn around and make them available to the communities that we serve, because we know that there's a deep desire for home ownership. We have 150 families right now looking for homes in that same situation as your caller. So we need to make sure that the inventory is available for them to actually be able to purchase when they've done the hard work of preparing themselves for home ownership.
That's Dee Kemp with us, Vice President of Axe Housing in Milwaukee. Chris Donahoe here, Wisconsin-based civil rights attorneys. We talk about affordable housing and federal legislation. You can join in with your questions and comments, 800-642-1234. Chris, we heard from Carol in Lake Geneva, called and says that in their city with so many tourists, people buy homes, turn them into short-term rentals like Airbnbs. And Carol says this drives homeowners out of the city because of problems related to short-term rentals. What issues do you see there?
Yeah, I mean, one is that exactly like Carol identified, there are issues with the people who are renting these places, and that makes the community less comfortable. These are tourists who are here to have fun. They don't necessarily worry about the neighbors when they're playing music loudly or getting rowdy in the backyard because they don't know the neighbors and they're never going to see them again. And then the second issue, of course, is that these are out-of-state buyers, a lot of them. And again, they're seeing single-family homes and duplexes as an asset to add to their wealth, instead of 50 or 100 years ago when single-family homes and duplexes were really owned and occupied by local people. And even if they were rented out, they were owned by a landlord, a mom-and-pop landlord that lived down the street. From 2005 to 2020, reporting from Mike Boucher and John Johnson at Marquette's Lubar Center found that the percentage of owner occupied fell from 80% to 69%. That was in 15 years, but that was in Milwaukee. And in Milwaukee, the north and the west sides, which are the lower income and majority Black neighborhoods, saw declines that were double that. And when you see the percentage of owner-occupied homes fall that much, you see a huge change in the community. There is no longer that investment and concern for the people around you. Those are no longer people who are attending the church on the block, whose kids go to the school down the road. It's a very different culture shift.
And do those homes fall into disrepair? Are they worked on? Are they upgraded? Do you find that, how does it affect blight?
They are not upgraded in the same way. And this is reporting by Mike Boucher and John Johnson and also Talis Shelburne and Carrie Spivak at the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. They've done excellent reporting on the effects of these out-of-state landlords here in Milwaukee. And they are finding that those landlords are not pulling the same permits the way that in-state landlords are. And so presumably they are not doing the same worker upgrades. And the reason is simple. It's the bottom line. It is not as cost effective. You are not going to get as much of a profit out of those properties if you do the kind of work and maintenance that one should.
Chris Donahoe, civil rights attorney, as we discussed investment practices by corporate landlords. Dee Kemp is here, vice president of programs at Axe Housing in Milwaukee. Call in with a question, your comment, 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Democrats on Capitol Hill, they aim to prevent investors from buying up dozens of single-family homes that are turned into higher-cost rentals that can push out first-time home buyers. Join in the conversation about housing. Call in with a question, 800-642-1234. We have Chris Donahoe, civil rights attorney, and Dee Kemp is here, vice president of programs at Axe Housing in Milwaukee. Dee, you mentioned the acquisition arm of Axe Housing, and I'm wondering, how could it be more effective and have more leverage in the current housing climate that has been laid out to us here?
Well, we are definitely working really hard to build up that fund so that we are able to have a large impact. So we definitely...
I think we just lost you there.
...of our community to do that, because at the end of the day... Can you still hear me?
You're just coming in and out there. I know you're trying to build up here this acquisition fund, and we lost you there.
I'm so sorry. Can you hear me now?
Yes.
We definitely need the support of the community as we continue to work to build that fund so that we have the funding necessary to really go out and act as investors and get these properties back into the hands of the community. At the end of the day, we know that home ownership creates vibrant communities. And when you have home ownership as the base of your community, that improves educational outcomes for the kids in that household. That improves the health outcomes for everyone in that household. The inflation that we've been experiencing the last couple of years, it's hit everyone, but for homeowners, it hasn't hit as hard because they have fixed rate mortgages that have kept their housing costs the exact same while other costs have risen. These families that are renting right now, they're seeing all of their costs associated with meeting their basic needs rising at a level much higher than their wages are. So homeownership stabilizes community, gives us the vibrancy that we know our cities are capable of, and really set the base for us to be the best version of ourselves.
Also, another piece of Axe Housing is your real estate brokerage work. And that means that you're at, you know, Axe Housing is at the table for some of these negotiations and the offers going back and forth. And I'm just wondering, what might you tell us about these types of proceedings and what your clients have encountered with homes, you know, being bid up, or what offers look like for its clients, you know, who are trying to buy with limited cash reserves?
It's a really tough environment for our families right now because they are competing with these investors. So imagine you're a family and you see the house that you think is perfect. You put in an offer only to find out that an investor has also put in an offer. And their offer isn't even as high as yours. But they're saying they'll pay all cash, no contingencies, no inspection, and they'll close really quickly. This family has financing. They definitely want an inspection because over the long term, this is their home. They want to know what's going on with it and that it's a good investment for them and that they can make any repairs that need to be made going into the future. They have bank financing. They can't offer all cash, quick close like investors can. So there's definitely been an impact. We have seen families get so discouraged by their inability to purchase because someone like an investor is coming in and making an offer that they simply cannot make. So what's been great with our Axe Homes acquisition division is being able to say, these are homes that we purchased. They're also not even on the market yet. So we can give you great pricing. And if this meets you and your family's needs, you're able to purchase this. We've just gotten going with our acquisition fund, but we have not had to hold on to any of the homes that we've purchased after we have rehabbed them. We have families ready and available to purchase them. So I think that clearly shows the need for organizations like Axe to step into this void and make sure that the homes that we have are available to homeowners who are invested in this state and invested in the communities that they reside in.
So do you primarily build up the acquisition fund through philanthropic contributions? How does that acquisition fund build up?
Yes, we definitely have had great support from philanthropy, also from the city and county, because they see the need. And often the government doesn't move as quickly as we hope or need it to address some of these issues. I think we've actually been pretty lucky in Wisconsin that there is so much vested interest in affordable housing and ensuring that our state is a great place to live, work, and play. And that means that there are feasible, viable home ownership opportunities for families that want to call our state home.
We're talking with Dee Kemp, Vice President of Axe Housing in Milwaukee. Chris Donahoe here, civil rights attorney. Chris, as Dee is talking about the policies and government not moving quickly enough, we heard from Annie in Janesville called and wants to know more about policies and legislation that would give communities less control over the housing market. Dee, Annie says, had mentioned this legislation earlier in the conversation and just wants to know who is in favor of or their argument for allowing communities to have less control of their own neighborhoods and housing stock. Can you elaborate there, Chris?
Well, I can say that because of the incredibly unfair maps that we have in the state, we have a strong Republican control over the Assembly and the Senate. And what's interesting is that an enormous number of our state legislators are landlords. And they may be good landlords, they may be in-state, smaller-time landlords, but they have systematically increased and expanded the rights of landlords and disempowered tenants over the course of at least the last 13 years since 2010, when they took a strong control of the state assembly. And every 2 years, they were passing for a long period before Tony Evers was governor. Every 2 years, they would pass a new set of laws that would take more rights away from tenants, make it easier to evict people, take away the rights of municipalities to set things like rent control. And so I think that it's that strong landlord-friendly legislation group of legislators out of Madison that have taken away power and control from individuals and local communities.
Looking ahead here, Dee, what could lawmakers pursue next to address affordable housing, to address this problem?
We would love to see local control come back so that every community has the opportunity to look at their situation and figure out what's best for their community members. All politics is local. And I think it's really important for local people to be able to say, these are the needs of our community. We want investment in our state. And if there's a great landlord out there who can come in and provide great service for the families of Wisconsin, okay, that's good. We need affordable rental housing. We need quality management. But if you're here simply to pull away from the wealth of our communities, we should be able to act. If you're here taking away supply from families who want to be homeowners, we need to react to that. So I think the important thing for one is for us all to be active, all to be aware, and really fight for our communities and let people know this is not acceptable. And we want to be able to have that local level of control that we know is necessary so that each community can make the best decisions based on what the situation is.
Chris, in our final moments here, looking forward here, what are next steps? What could start to address this affordable housing issue?
Well, I think that this federal legislation is a great start. We've identified one piece of this problem, and we can cut down on out-of-state investors simply by targeting those who are buying more than 50 properties. That's a lot of properties. So we're talking about enormous, incredibly wealthy private equity firms, a lot of which are quite literally from Wall Street. And then the second piece of this is to make it easier to rent. Right now we have all sorts of subsidies and support for homeowners, but it's very difficult to rent, and we don't have subsidies. We don't have federal subsidies or, tax deductions for renting.
Hmm.
And, groups like ACTS are excellent that are focusing on homeownership. I agree that that's necessary in order to build any type of generational wealth.
And we have to leave it there. Dee and Chris, thank you both for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Chris Donahoe, civil rights attorney. Dee Kemp, vice president of programs for ACTS Housing, helping families of color in Milwaukee and Beloit buy and rehab houses. Earlier, we talked with fiscal policy journalist Liz Farmer. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network.